he's people under 35, right, or something like that.
There's a particular demographic he's trending well with right now, but there's a lot of discussion about whether or not he's going to pull away from Democrats or Republicans more, which I'm curious what that would look like with Chase Oliver, for example. You know, where is he pulling away from? Is he kind of pulling more from disaffected Republicans, Democrats who are kind of just done with Joe Biden? Do you think that this kind of pulls back to libertarian appeal. Where do you think libertarians should message most? Where do you think their success is in trying to find a voter base?
Definitely disaffected Republicans, and certainly Democrats who are struggling with the way the modern party is going. Because there's a lot of people who have been Democrats that I know, and these have been Democrats since the 1960s, and that the Democrats of the 1960s are not the Democrats of today, and I think people get into this trap of, oh, I'm a Democrat, I'll stick with it. But they don't exactly know what the Democratic Party means, but they're just rooted in believing that they want to vote for the Democratic Party.
Well, you'll walk into a booth, kind of close your eyes and like put your finger on the Democrat and just like check it off.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
I think genuinely that's what some voters do, and I think it's because they have this attachment, and they hear all the messaging, down with the Republicans, etc. So they feel that that's a part of what they have to do and whatnot. But in reality, they just don't know exactly what they're talking about. They don't realize that if they really took the time to examine it, they'd figure out more where they lie. I think we're missing out on the older demographic a lot. And certainly a good degree of young people who are disillusioned with the modern two-party system.
I mean, you know, ultimately what it comes down to is messaging and outreach. Let's look at one of the higher profile libertarian races of the past 2-3 years. Chase Oliver, again, in the Georgia Senate race. You have an opportunity where a libertarian and a Democrat were on the stage without a Republican. Herschel Walker just didn't show up to that debate, and irregardless, there was an empty podium on the stage, and Chase Oliver was attempting to engage Raphael Warnock on the issues, but Warnock was debating the empty podium and debating Walker instead of debating Chase Oliver, and the lack of seriousness that he was given in that situation is concerning to me. You know, if libertarians are going to try to make a case for themselves, we need to find ways to be taken more seriously.
Absolutely. And the thing with that, though, is we have to be taken more seriously, but that means doing it with dignity. What Chase Oliver did on that stage was represent the Libertarian Party in a brilliant fashion, and let the two squabbling other party candidates or podium and squabbling party candidate have it out. I think the way we win is through dignity, and I think we can absolutely do that with how Chase Oliver represented himself there. Absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of just closing thoughts we can probably get into because we are running into our last minute here. We'll end it on this. Favorite libertarian figure, libertarian movement figure, favorite candidate, speaker, what do you got?
I mean, libertarian candidate, like outwardly identifying with the Libertarian Party.
Libertarian Party, libertarian leaning.
I mean, I'd say Coolidge, but I don't want to steal it from you. I'll go with Gary Johnson. As much as he didn't know where Aleppo was, I thought he definitely had some good points and good representation for the Libertarian Party that we needed, and he did a good job comparatively.
Yeah, I mean, I'll always be a Goldwater guy, but Ron Paul's definitely someone that is still kind of prevalent in the movement, and we owe a lot to in the movement. But thank you so much for coming on today and talking a little bit about this. Highlighting somewhere that we don't really hear too much about, outside maybe, I don't know, the Reason podcast or something like that. But listen, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you being here, and hopefully I'll have you on soon one day.
You should. You should. Absolutely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the chance to come on.
Yeah, well, listen, you all have a wonderful day. Take care. God bless, and I'll see you all.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot?
WRCT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
An early portrait of Henri Matisse. One was quite certain that for a long part of his being one being living, he had been trying to be certain that he was wrong in doing what he was doing. And then when he could not come to be certain that he had been wrong in doing what he had been doing, when he had completely convinced himself that he would not come to be certain that he had been wrong in doing what he had been doing, he was really certain then that he was a great one. And he certainly was a great one. Certainly everyone could be certain of this thing, that this one is a great one. This one was one very many were knowing some, and very many were glad to meet him. Very many sometimes listened to him. Some listened to him very often. There were some who listened to him, and he talked then, and he told them then that certainly he had been one suffering, and he was then being one trying to be certain that he was wrong in doing what he was doing, and he had come then to be certain that he never would be certain that he was doing what was wrong for him to be doing then. And he was suffering then, and he was certain that he would be one doing what he was doing, and he was certain that he should be one doing what he was doing, and he was certain that he would always be one suffering. And this then made him certain, this, that he would always be one being suffering, this made him certain that he was expressing something being struggling. And certainly very many were quite certain that he was greatly expressing something being struggling. This one was knowing some who were listening to him, and he was telling very often about being one suffering. And this was not a dreary thing to anyone hearing that then. It was not a saddening thing to anyone hearing it again and again. To some, it was quite an interesting thing hearing it again and again. To some, it was an exciting thing hearing it again and again. Some knowing this one and being certain that this one was a great man and was one clearly expressing something were ones hearing this one telling about being one being living. We're hearing this one telling this thing again and again. Some who were ones knowing this one, and were ones certain that this one was one who was clearly telling something, was a great man, were not listening very often to this one telling again and again about being one being living. Certainly some who were certain that this one was a great man, and one clearly expressing something, and greatly expressing something being struggling, were listening to this one telling about being living, telling about this again and again and again. Certainly very many knowing this one, and being certain that this one was a great man, and that this one was clearly telling something, were not listening to this one telling about being living. were not listening to this one telling this again and again.
Well, You are listening to Wound Liquor with Dr. Anomia on WRCT 88.3 FM in the Pittsburgh area and surroundings. Also, WRCT.org throughout the universe.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, one in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Kita sudah ikut nyoblos pemilu lebih dari sekali.
Salah? Diikuti dari mana?
Tiga, Bapak.
Whoa, whoa. I am not sure what that's about. Hi, it's Dr. Nomia. I hope you can hear me. I have had trouble with getting any response from the headphones, and the music is coming out wonky, and the levels need to be adjusted, so I don't know. Gremlins in the ear studio. Welcome to another edition of Wound Liquor. You're program of the tailor-made healing arts. And what do we deal with? We deal with phobias. And what are phobias? Phobias are the excessive irrational fear of an object, animal, person, activity, environment, situation, toenail, whatever. And we're all beset with some fearfulness towards something or other. It's a matter of degree. Just to caution you, I mean, a real signifiable phobia is something that persists at this excessive level for at least 6 months. And, you know, my particular therapy in this regard has to do with trying to quell it with the idea of musical mixtures that are tailor-made, curated, especially for the phobia that we're discussing, but also to deal with the idea of a more, how should I put this, of a more quantum realm, the quantum foam, as one would maybe put it. And namely, that's neutrinos, and namely, that's subatomic particles, but mostly neutrinos, which I've riddled with healing, deep healing, mentholated goodness to help curb your anxieties, your fearfulness of phobias, whatever you're being phobic about, I should say. Anyway, what we're going to be dealing with today is the fear of reading the fear of books. It's called bibliophobia, and it is a specific phobia. You know, in the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic Manual in Psychiatry, this as a specific phobia is not indicated. Phobias do appear, but, you know, not particularly this one. And I have to say it's a very rare phobia, too. Mostly people who have a legitimate fear or phobic reaction to bibliophobia, have bibliophobia, the fear of books or reading, it's a subset kind of thing, all right? Subset meaning it is a specific type of read, a specific type of book, textbooks, you know, particularly genre books. You know, it could be, well, for me, I mean, I don't know if it's a fear, it's a revulsion and an aversion. Like, I don't like big beach novels, you know, big fat, you know, big fat novels that people have tended to, Robert Michener kind of novels. But we'll be talking more about a little bit of what other indicators are in this phobic response and what, you know, what's, you know, stimuli arise. I want to tell you, though, and this will be happening for the next 2 weeks. I am going to be away. I have to recertify myself. Continuing education units for my practice in healing, and so I'm going to be attending a workshop in south of the border, and I can't tell you exactly where. That's kind of a well protected secret that the good doctor and Reverend Mike Shrouds, in terms of his radio station, the affiliate of WRCT. But I'm going to be attending a seminar, a workshop on metaphysical applications in electrolysis and specifically in bikini wax. So I won't be here for the next couple Thursdays. I'll be back the third Thursday, I believe. I don't even know what that is. But I won't be here on the 14th and the 21st. But listen in, because something nice will be happening anyway. All right? It always does. So, okay. I'll be coming back in a little bit to tell you more. And hold tight. Hold tight. All right.
Ikut ngapus pemilu lebih dari sekali.
Salah diikuti jari mana?
Hur ska vi presentera den här skivan? Ja, det är så här att vi har hittat en stor samling med inspelningar nere i oändliga biblioteket. Långt nere i kulverterna, under bakomkällan. Då presenterar vi det så här. Den här CD:n, det är den här rösten. Intressanta spår! Ja, just det. Forskningsmaterial. And for you English listeners, we found a huge collection of tapes down in the infinite library, deep down below the Bockel basement. Yeah. Heavy underground. Good material. Finest blend.
Thank you. takes you by surprise. It comes, leaves all you need and more beside. I'm for a life and time by numbers, blessed and fast. I'm full of revolution.
This is G. Gordon Liddy. I urge you to tune in to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 on your FM dial. If you don't, I'll break both your legs.
Hello, this is Dr. Simon Meningitis, inviting you to join me for my show, Saturdays at 4 on XWLR, Reiki for Shut-Ins. Well, I will unblock your chi using only the long-distance power of my mind.
That's Reiki for Shut-Ins, here, on your station from south of the border, 500,000 watts beaming north, XWLR.
Howdy. It's Dr. Nomia back with you, catching my breath here. Let me tell you some good things, okay? Some good things. RCT is supported by Attic Records, located in Millville. Attic Records is open 7 days a week. They sell new and used records and CDs from a range of genres, including rock, doo-wop, metal, reggae, and hip-hop. Attic Records is an independently owned and operated shop that purchases used records and CDs from collectors in bulk or by unit. Attic Records is located at 513 Grant Avenue in Millville. More information about selling records and new releases is available at 412-821-8484 or at Attic Records Store, Inc. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Now, more good stuff. Courts in session. Join your rockin' attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie, for 2.5 hours of rock and roll, country, and soul, with a focus on new music by your favorite classic artists. Thursdays at 8 p.m. and re-airing Sunday nights at 11 p.m. only on WRCT. And I got to tell you, Eric, thank you so much. But also, Eric's got some surprises in store for you. Yes, indeed. Couch dancing, funky, deep, psychedelic, electronic music, and that. Couch dancing with DJ Firefly, Wednesday afternoons, 3 to 5 p.m., and re-airing 1 to 3 p.m. on Fridays on WRCT Pittsburgh. What you're hearing in the background is Arvo Pärt, the beautifully ethereal composer Arvo Pärt. And I was a little worried because this is a little thin. It's an ECM disc, and it's a little thin in sound. Again, very ethereal, but kind of just doesn't have any womp womp. Speaking of which, hopefully womp womp will be following me right after that. But anyway, that's what's playing in the background. We are dealing with the phobia called bibliophobia. And it is the fear of books and the fear of reading. And it's a not a very commonly occurring phobia. Phobias actually in public are probably about, I would say, 9% of the population. I think a little bit higher with adolescents as far as bibliophobia is concerned. I think it's like somewhere to 10%. Wow, that's coming out really nice. Nice choir in the background. Anyway, very ethereal. So anyway, I'm going to come back a little bit later with a little bit more extensive talking, about approaches. You know, I don't have, I have to admit, as I'm sure many of you will admit, you don't have a particular phobia about reading. Unfortunately, folks that, you know, have been shamed for their difficulty with reading skills when they were younger, had been traumatized possibly, or have dyslexia. I mean, these are things that certainly can make reading a very punishing endeavor for folks who've, you know, so been shamed. But really, the reaction is much more acute for folks who have just a, again, like with all the phobias, there is surmised or genetic as well as environmental component. What else can you expect, right? I mean, that's pretty much your standard answer for everything that besets the human condition. In terms of psychically speaking. But, you know, it can very well be a case of just like a subset. Like I mentioned earlier, genres can be somehow upsetting, you know, scary stories, things like that. And, you know, that's why people avoid them. But, you know, I mean, honestly, sometimes it could be a brain issue. The amygdala has been indicated in difficulty with bibliophobia. And, you know, you've also got folks that, if they don't have dyslexia or have been shamed with reading, are illiterate. So that does make sense that someone would be phobic about having to read, having to be witnessed trying to read, all that stuff. So, anyway, enough yakety-yak for now. We'll continue with music, and then I want to come back to tell you about some personal experiences, but I want you to think about your own personal experiences with genres or items that, you know, you really have had difficulty with reading, okay? And then I'm going to give you my own personalized, tailor-made cure just for you, okay? Anyway, we're going to continue.
I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The latest, and perhaps really, next to Mexico in the jazz high, I'll tell in a minute, Best Vision, also on high, but under entirely different circumstances, was the vision I had of Neil as he showed me one afternoon in January on the sidewalks of Workaday San Francisco, just like Workaday afternoon on Moody Street in Lowell, when boyhood buddy funny guy G.J. and I played zombie piggybacks in mill employment offices and workmen's saloons. The Silver Star it was. And what and how the Three Stooges are like when they go staggering and knocking one another down the street. Moe, Curly, who's actually the bald-domed one, Big Husky. And meaningless Goof, though somewhat mysterious as though he was a saint in disguise, can't remember his name, a masquerading super-duper witch doctor with good intentions, actually. Can't think of his name. Neil knows his name, the bushy, feathery-haired one. And Neil was supposed to be looking after his work. We just blasted a pint in the car as we drove down the hill into wild mid-market traffic and out Third past the Little Harlem, where 2.5 years ago we jumped with the Wild Tenor Cats and Freddie and the rest. I dig the Little Harlem in rainy midnights coming home from work in the black slouch hat from the corner, the pale, pretty pink neons, the modernistic front, the puddles so rosy glowing at the foot of the entrance, the long, arrowing, deserted Folsom Street, which, as I hadn't remembered in my back east reveries, run straight into the far lights of the Mission or Richmond or whatever district, all glitters in the indigo distance of the night, to make you think of trucks and long hauls to Paso Robles, bleak Obispo or Monterey or Fresno in the mist of highways. The ones with an end which is water orients and the empurpled Golgothian panoplies of Pacific Bowl and Abyss. Past the dingy bars with their incredible names, colored bars like Moonlight in Colorado. That's one actually in Fillmore. Or Blue Midnight, or pink glass, and inside it's all wretched raw brown whiskey and mauve boilermakers. Past Mission Street earlier, too, before Folsom, with this corner conglomerate of bums, are sometimes lines of dragged winos so torpid that when pretty women pass, they don't even look, even though they're waiting in line to give blood for $4 at Cutter's, so they can cut off and buy wine and brandy for the Embarcadero night. And if they do look, it's accidental. And they seem to be too guilty to look at ordinary women, only Steamboat Annies of pierfront bouges with knots in their sticks for calf muscles and haggless tooth marks in their purply gums. Yeah, that's right. Bums of Mission and Howard that live in miserable flop hotels like the Skylark in Denver. That Neil and his father, old Neil Pomeroy the tinsmith, lived in and from which they took their Sunday afternoon walks together hand in hand and amiable after the previous Saturday night's hassles over the his over-drinking wine and the ceremonial saved-up evening movie. So he'd snore at usher close-up time, and lights on in the showhouse would reveal to shuffling audiences of whole Mexican and Arky families the sight of one of their fellow Americans a bit under the weather in a seat.
I've got an addiction. To fast cars. To
we'll be right back. WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hello, this is Alex Patterson from the Orb, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh on 88.3 FM, suckers. Hello, this is Alex Patterson.
What's going on around town.
You like that mix, kids? All right, let's talk about the events and the radio calendar. All right. Steel City Squares hosts monthly square dances including March 16th, April 13th, and May 11th. Dances are beginner and family-friendly traditional Appalachian squares with a live band and caller. No experience is necessary. All dances are taught. Doors plus potluck plus open old-time jam at 7. Dance at 8. All of the dances take place at Shiloh Center, 3832 Mintwood Street in Lawrenceville. More information about Steel City Squares is posted on Facebook or email squaredancepittsburgh@gmail.com. Pittsburgh Center for Arts and Media will host a plein air paint out. Let me get some music going on here. All right, more ethereal stuff. Pittsburgh Center for Arts and Media will host a plein air paint out on April 20th and 21st. The two-day event will take place from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, April 20th and 10 a.m.